Elissa Walker Campbell is on the air,
asking the questions you want to know
with sports' biggest and best names. Dallas Mavericks television play-by-play announcer Mark Folliwell.
Rick is, I think, just a great guy at handling these situations. I have all the respect in the world for him as a coach, how to manage the roster and knew what all of his guys were capable of doing and or not doing and put them in a position to succeed.
The fastest hour in radio. Big names, big sports talk. The Big E Sports Show, hosted by Elissa Walker Campbell.
Elissa Walker Campbell, we are back this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. And get ready, it is time to lace it up. We're going to talk some NBA this weekend with one of my favorite guys, Bill Ingram, the executive editor with Hoops World. And Bill, it has been another busy week in the NBA. And my heart goes out to the Dallas Mavericks as they are finishing off 5 games in 6 nights. It has been such a difficult stretch and an unprecedented number of games. As head coach Rick Carlisle says, it is pure basketball at its purest. And I have to say, I think the Mavericks have certainly shown us some incredible resolve and ability to bounce back, especially after that heartbreaking loss in Oklahoma City and coming back with that win against New York. That truly was, as Jason Kidd said, a character win.
Well, that's what it has to be. When you look at the way the schedule is, and Rick has said a number of times, it's like he's playing a baseball schedule instead of NBA, because you look at a week, and there might be 5 games in a week, which before this, you know, in a normal season, just unheard of. So, you know, you're having to deal with the injuries, you're having to deal with the fact that you're playing so many games close together, preparing for so many different things all at once, and you know, a heartbreaking loss, you have even less time to shake that off than you normally would. So, all of those factors come together to provide the ultimate challenge for the Mavs as they look to try and repeat as champions, which is hard enough just in a normal year.
As we look at the schedule, here we are in the month of March. How do you see things coming together for the Dallas Mavericks? You had just alluded to and talked about the injury situation, but these guys will get up to speed. Delonte West will soon be coming back, and the center position, everybody should be back in full force here soon.
Well, that's important. Right now, I really see the Mavs as they're in the middle of the pack. There's only one team in the West that I really feel like could come out. I mean, I really think when you look at the standings, Oklahoma City Thunder has been at the top throughout. San Antonio's had a little run. The Clippers had a little run. Denver had a little run. And injuries have happened to those teams and set them back time and time again. The Spurs have probably done the best, considering Manu's been out so much of the time. But I really think with Dallas, you know, we're sitting just a handful of games out of the second seed. The way the West is, you win 2 games in a row, you could be the 4th seed. You lose 2 games in a row, you could be really as far as the 9th seed. And Utah's looking to make up ground. Portland's looking to make up ground. In the West, there are going to be probably 3 really good teams, maybe 4, that don't make the playoffs. The difference between those teams is 1 win here and 1 win there, and maybe 3 games overall. And the Mavs are in the thick of it. That's where you want to be right now. You want to be in the thick of it. Once you get into April, it's going to be extremely important to make sure you're making up ground and getting where you want to be. But right now, it's about staying healthy. You don't want Dirk going down. You don't want Jason Kidd going down. You want to get everybody. You know, Delonte was so important to this team.
Absolutely.
They were playing well early. So it's really about getting healthy, keeping everybody healthy with this crazy schedule, so that when you enter the playoffs, you have everybody ready to go.
You are listening to the voice of Bill Ingram. Of course, we know him well with Hoops World. He is the executive NBA editor. And I thought it was interesting listening to Jason Kidd in postgame after the Knicks win that, you know, he reminded all of us in the media, hey, last year, let's not forget, we lost 6 games in a row. And everyone thought, you know, hey, they won't be able to make it out of the first or perhaps even the second round. And that is the makeup of this ball club. You know, perhaps they don't always do things the easy way, but they do figure out a way to get things done. And so as you're talking about it, the forefront of their mind is going to be, you know, as Rick talks about, defend, rebound, take care of the basketball. If they're able to do those things and execute late in the fourth quarter, they're going to surprise some folks.
Well, the Mavs have never done it the easy way. I mean, winning the championship, I think many of us thought, myself included, that Portland was going to take them out. You know, when Brandon Roy had that amazing showing, it's heartbreaking to watch, you know, with him not being able to play after being reminded what he could do. But the Mavs always seem to take the difficult route. They always get behind. They always are slow to start. I mean, Dirk is always this slow. The whole thing about that, oh, Dirk doesn't care anymore, he's not motivated. Really? This is a great example of how we don't pay attention to one year to the next. Like, there's no memory in pro sports. It's only today. Because Dirk struggles every year. It's just normally it's an 82-game season, and he struggles for 2 weeks, and that's a space of about 5 games. Whereas this time he struggled for 2 weeks, and it was like 8 games, and everybody's losing their minds. But Dirk's going to be there. Jet's going to be there. And really, it is, when you talk about Rick Carlisle, it is the old saying of it being a marathon, not a sprint. He is not concerned about a three-game struggle or one player being off for four games or the things that we as the media tend to focus on. Because especially, I mean, the local guys have to write about the same team every day. So if somebody's off for four games, oh, it's a huge story. To Rick Carlisle, it's not. To Rick Carlisle, it's, well, this is four games. Let's see what it looks like after 20. And after 20, you know, Dirk's great. He's MVP. He's doing everything, you know, blocking shots and 20,000 points for his career and all, you know, all the different things that Dirk does. And by the time the playoffs come, that's the goal. It's for everybody to be doing what they do and be ready to go. And with Jason Terry, Dirk, you're talking about some of the most clutch players in the league. And I got to believe the matchup doesn't matter as much as health. If they're healthy, the Mavs are going to find a way to exceed expectations, even if that's not, maybe they don't repeat his chance, but they're going to make some noise in the postseason.
Well, in order to exceed expectations, they truly do, as Coach Carlisle talks about, they have got to play hard for a full 48 minutes. They can't get complacent. And I tell you, they gave me a bit of a fright against the New York Knicks the other night, you know, losing that 19-point lead in the second half before they hit the button up for recovery mode, because that was pretty scary until Dirk kicked it in.
Yeah, the Mavs don't hold leads. They just don't. I don't. A lot of times I say don't even bother watching the first half, because they could be down 20 or up 20, and at the end it's not going to be be a totally different thing.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how many times I've sat at a Mavs game and watched them just tear out of the gates, and then the closer you get to the fourth quarter, it's like, oh boy, here we go. They like to keep it close for the fans.
Well, tell us quickly, you know, we've hit on the importance and the value of Delonte West. How is he shaping up and his recovery? Because he's just been so critical when he has been healthy and 100%.
He has. I've been really surprised by what a great addition both he and Vince Carter have been. I mean, Delonte, you know, worked his way into the starting lineup right away, which I didn't think, you know, he's one of those guys that's kind of floated around the league, and he's got some sort of half issues going on off the court, and, you know, his medication issues and all those things. But he's been fantastic. He's been just a great pro, and I think we're still a little ways away. That was a nasty finger injury, but you know, the nice thing is the Mavs have some depth, and I mentioned Vince Carter. He's just been great for the Mavs, both in the locker room and on the court. So they have some depth. Roddy Bobois is now back from his injury, or actually it was an injury. He's gone with a family situation. So they do have the bodies to fill in. But I think when West comes back, it's another level. It's a level of consistency and veteran savvy that Roddy Bobois doesn't bring, and they'll be better when he's back.
Yeah, Rodrigue Bobois, I mean, having to deal difficult with some adversity and difficult time, but boy, he really bounced right back and has been very aggressive and has been a real asset to them, and that's been so critical.
It has, and the thing with Roddy, he has these great games, you know, where he does a lot of things, but now he's not a point guard. If you put him at point guard, you're setting yourself up to fail because he's not a good distributor. He's more likely to turn it over than make a great pass. But if you give him the ball and say, go out there and make something happen on the offensive end, and even defensively, we saw him do some nice things against Jeremy Lin. So you have to understand his strengths, and I think that's kind of what has taken Rick Carlisle a while, is to figure out how much he can mold Roddy and how much he's going to have to mold the rest of the game plan around his strengths, which is so key. It's the same thing that made Dirk a champion. You know, Dirk, you have to understand he's not going to be a great defender or a tremendous rebounder. He's got better, but if you add a Tyson Chandler, maybe a Brendan Haywood, we'll see how that works out. But you add someone who is the things he's not, you allow him to flourish being what he is. And that's the beauty of Rick Carlisle. Like Rick Adelman, you know, the great coaches are able to put players like Dirk, like Roddy Bobois, into a situation where they can excel and then let them do it.
You're listening to the voice of Bill Ingram this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. Just a couple more minutes with him. And, of course, a lot of trade rumors going on. We got the March 15th deadline. It's approaching. What's the latest scoop? Come on, Bill. Bring it to us.
Well, the big thing is, you know, as the Lakers being the team everybody wants to talk about, they need a point guard, and they need one in a bad way. It's the reason they've struggled as much as they struggle. I mean, they're in the sixth seed, so it's not like they're horrible. But in L.A., that's like missing the playoffs. So they expect the top seed, they expect, and Kobe, frankly, brings that expectation every night. But, you know, you've got a new head coach in town, and he's not using the triangle, which did not emphasize great point guard play. Now you need a point guard that's going to lead, that's going to have the ball in his hands, make the right decisions, put people in the right positions, and they don't have that. So they're working the phones. They want Houston's Kyle Lowry. They're offering Gasol for Scola and Lowry. The Rockets don't want to give up Lowry. They're saying take Kevin Martin. We'll see how that works out. They're talking to the Cavaliers about Ramon Sessions, who Mike Brown had previously. They're talking to the Raptors about Jose Calderon, but the Raptors, I don't think they're going to let him go. They're talking to Portland about Raymond Felton. The Lakers are literally the team that's working all the phones trying to find a point guard before the trade deadline. But there's a lot of stuff going on. Steven Jackson wants to be out of Milwaukee. The Hornets are trying to convince Eric Gordon he needs to stay. He's not convinced. The Mavs are surprisingly not in the mix for anything, which they usually are, but that's because they're focused on free agency. You know, they've got Dwight Howard and Darren Williams in mind. So it's going to be busy. There's going to be a lot of talk. But as always, 98% of the deals that are discussed never happen. They leak, and we talk about them, and it's very exciting. But when it comes down to the deadline, you know, two or three things happen, and we'll see. But I do believe one thing that's got to happen for the Lakers is they've got to have a point guard.
You did bring up Dwight Howard. I have to ask you, as we get ready to close out this interview, how much longer will he be a member of the Orlando Magic? A lot of speculation right now on what's going to happen with him and his future.
Well, Dwight's a very good friend of ours, and I can tell you he has not decided. You know, so anybody that says Dwight has decided he's leaving or Dwight has decided he's staying, Dwight has not decided. I mean, as of All-Star, when I was talking to him, he really wants to be in Orlando. He really wants to compete for a championship. And his dream scenario is for those two things to happen together, to compete for a championship in Orlando. Problem is they've not put him in a situation where that's going to happen. They're just not there. Otis Smith, their GM, has really made a mess of the team. So they're competitive, but they're not contenders. The question that really is weighing on Dwight's mind right now is, do I not opt out? Stay one more year in Orlando, because after that, the Magic have a ton of cap space. Josh Smith, who is Dwight's best friend, will be a free agent. His contract with the Hawks will be over. Monte Ellis, who is another really close friend of both Josh and Dwight's, will be at the end of his contract with the Warriors. Chris Paul's contract with the Clippers. All of a sudden, you start to look and say, okay, if I'm Otis Smith, I'm saying, Dwight, give us one more year. You're going to make $18+ million. Money's not the issue. Then we'll bring in whoever you want. You get Josh Smith on the phone, tell him to come to Orlando, and we'll sign him. Monte Ellis, I don't know if you get Chris Paul out of L.A., but I think he'll have the discussion. And you sell Dwight on that big picture, because that's ultimately what it has to be. I don't see how Dwight going to New Jersey, just having Darren Williams and Dwight, is not necessarily a championship team. So if I'm the Magic, that's what I'm selling him on. Give us one more year. Let's bring in all your friends, and let's let you guys compete for a championship together.
For the latest NBA news, rumors, and predictions, we want to encourage you guys to go to hoopsworld.com. Great things are happening there. And Bill, as I understand, we have to share with all of our listeners, you guys are taking your game to a whole new level. You have teamed up now with USA Today, is that correct?
USA Today, they actually bought us.
My goodness.
6 weeks ago, and so we're not exactly sure what it's going to mean, other than new business cards and a new contract and, you know, that sort of thing. But they've got big visions of the future, so we'll see, you know, what they can yield. But obviously, USA Today is a huge brand. They own 80 newspapers and 40 television stations and all kinds of stuff. So they want us to be the forefront of their NBA coverage, and we're happy to do that. So it's just, you know, we're going to wait and see how exactly that's going to happen. But it'll be exciting. I mean, there's no doubt. When a company like USA Today says they like what you're doing, you know, it's a good feeling knowing that you've worked hard and it's been recognized.
Congratulations on that. That's exciting, and we look forward to our next conversation. It sounds like you're doing daddy duties today. Little Riley, your 8-month-old, she wants to be on the radio too, right?
she's preparing for her radio voice. You hear that? Her radio.
I do.
She's getting it ready so that she can do the. She can talk about the Eastern Conference while I talk about the West, or, you know, play devil's advocate here pretty soon.
What are you talking about, Bill? She wants to talk about the WNBA, right?
Or, hey, whatever floats her boat. I'm not telling her she's got to talk about basketball. So
there you go. Well, listen, you take care. We'll talk to you real soon and see you at those Mavs games, okay?
Hey, sounds good.
We're going to step aside. Jason Peter will be with us in just a moment with our Under the Helmet segment. Stay close.
Looking to be a part of a dynamic company that provides exceptional service in the oil and gas industry? Then consider IPS. Integrated Production Services is a leading provider of production enhancement services for oil and gas producers. At IPS, we are currently seeking energetic and team-oriented individuals with a successful track record in the oil and gas field. Here at IPS, we are committed to building a better tomorrow and for future generations through our reputation of hiring the best professionals and industry leaders to serve our clients. clients better. IPS is offering entry-level positions, plus also seeking knowledgeable professionals with experience in logging and perforating, coil tubing and frac stimulation. Consider IPS for your future today. Send your resume to IPS, 2269 North Mash Branch Road, Suite Number 1, Denton, Texas, 76207, or give them a call at 940-484-4481. That's 940-484-4481. Or check us out online at ipsadvantage.com.
It's the show you don't want to miss. The Big E Sports Show with Elissa Walker-Campbell. Stay tuned as Elissa goes up close and personal with some of the biggest names in the world of sports. From Dallas Cowboys Hall of Fame quarterback Roger Staubach to legendary broadcaster Pat Summerall. Think big. Think big. It's all happening right here on the Big E Sports Show.
Elissa Walker-Campbell, we are back this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. And here we go. Teams and fans around the country are gearing up for the 2012 Division I Men and Women's Basketball Championships. That's right. March Madness is in full swing this week. And we thought it would be wonderful to catch up with Barry Wilner. He is a longtime AP sports writer that has just released a brand new book. He and his colleague, he teamed up with Ken Rappaport. It is titled The Big Dance, the story of the NC2A basketball tournament. And I don't know about you, Barry, but this is certainly one of my favorite times of the year. How about you?
Oh, it's so exciting. And the fact that spring is coming to where I live in New York is always nice, and it's always indicative when March Madness hits, and you know, spring's right around the corner.
You know, it's interesting, when I look at your bio, you have covered all sports. Since 1975, you've worked with the Associated Press, the Olympics, World Cup, Super Bowl, the World Series, and the Stanley Cup Finals. Where does college basketball, where does that rank in your mind with the excitement of the game and how it just continues to grow and flourish?
As an experience working it, I'd say it's second to the World Cup, which is by far my favorite event of anything I've ever covered. But as a fan, unquestionably, it's number one. In fact, I think I enjoy the conference championships that have been going on as much as I do the actual tournament. I love the drama. I love the way every basket is so important, because so many of these teams can't go to the tournament unless they win the conference tournament.
Yes, the value of each possession, there's no doubt about that on both ends of the floor. And I think what is so intriguing to me is, you know, when it comes to March Madness and this time of year, everyone, you know, we all love a David Goliath kind of a story and matchup. And I'm always wondering, who is going to be that Cinderella team? Who's going to be that bracket buster? And before we do a little bit of a review on your brand new book, The Big Dance, who do you think, in your mind, Barry, is going to be that bracket buster this year and is going to surprise a lot of folks? Let's specifically talk about the men's tournament.
Well, the great thing about the men's tournament is you get something like last year, where a perennial team like Connecticut, a perennial contender that is coming out of one of the biggest conferences, winds up being an underdog and an outsider, and not only wins 5 games in 5 nights to win the conference tournament, but then goes on a tear in the NCAA tournament and wins it. And, you know, that's so exciting, because you look at teams like Butler and VCU and some of those teams who got to the Final Four in the last few years, George Mason. And then you realize some of these big-time teams are actually outsiders in a way, too. And that adds so much excitement to it. As for this year, it wouldn't shock me to see a team like Connecticut come out of a big conference and do the same thing.
You're listening to the voice of Barry Wilner. He has a brand new book that is out. It is titled The Big Dance, the story of the NC2A basketball tournament. And it truly is a wonderful read. It gives you a great historical perspective. But let's talk about some of the things that have happened even as of recently. In 2011, you know, the NC2A tournament, they added 3 more teams to make it 68 for the field. Barry, what are your thoughts on that?
That was a very controversial move, because there were many people who wanted more teams added, and to even get up to 96, which I think would be a farce. I was not really in favor of even adding 3 more teams, but I'm glad they stopped at that number. And then what happens last year? VCU comes out of those final teams that actually get in and winds up in the Final Four, and I don't think anyone can argue that Virginia Commonwealth wasn't that far from winning the national title. So I guess the NCAA knew what it was doing by adding those teams, but I sure hope it doesn't go to more than 68 at any time soon.
Absolutely. You don't want it to be too diluted. Now, talk to us a little bit about as far as the layout of the book. I thought it was really, and I certainly appreciate as a former college basketball player, this was not just dedicated to the story of the men's NC2A tournament, but you also made a point to really highlight all the great things that are happening within women's basketball and just a history of so many of the great players that have been a part of our game. And as I understand, Barry, it really was a labor of love for you because you specifically wrote that particular chapter, correct?
Yes, I insisted that we have a chapter not only about women's basketball in the in college game, but that we go through the entire history of it. It's the longest chapter in the book because the rest of the book is dedicated pretty much to the men. And I enjoy the women's game so much because it's pure basketball. It isn't quite as physical, although, as you know from having played it, it is still pretty physical. But it's not the power game we see with the men so often. It's the way I think that James Naismith envisioned the game as it progressed. And I thought the stories were so great, going all the way back to Immaculata, this little school in Pennsylvania where the team didn't even have its own gym. Sometimes it'd have to practice around volleyball players and other athletes in the gym they were using, and then taking it up until the NCAA took over from the AIWA, and also what to me is one of the great dynasties in basketball, two of them, Tennessee and Connecticut. And they rival what UCLA did for the men, and they've actually sustained it even over a longer period than UCLA did. So I just find it fascinating. And I think the women deserved as big a chapter as we put in there.
Yeah, I was happy to see you also include, as you talk about, going back in the day, Sonja Hoges, Louisiana Tech, of course, she certainly set the tone early for women's basketball with that AIAW crown. Barry Wilner is with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. Of course, we're doing a review on his brand new book. It is titled The Big Dance, The Story of the NC2A Basketball Tournament. And you were talking about one of the giants in the game. Let's flash back to John Wooden, 10 national championships in 12 years. And I thought what was remarkable, and this refreshed my memory, it took him 16 years before he secured that first championship. You talk about having some perseverance and fighting all the way through.
Well, for Wooden, there was actually a time when his job might have been a bit in jeopardy. UCLA had become a decent program, but certainly not a great program. And he really built the program on great defense and pressured defense and moving the ball up court quickly, getting people like Gail Goodrich and Walt Hazard into the program. And once they established themselves and the fact that so many players back then wanted to go to a place like UCLA, even someone like Lou Alcindor, who became Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, was very much eager to go cross country to play at this program. And it just, what happened was so many great players would continue to go to UCLA because of the great players who went there beforehand. It's kind of something like we've seen maybe in recent years at Duke in North Carolina and a few other programs, and certainly the women's program at Connecticut and Tennessee. And but at the beginning of his career, John Wooden was certainly not the Wizard of Westwood.
Well, he certainly sits on the throne, though, for top coaches of all time. There's no doubt about that. But I am curious, can you provide some insight? I mean, how was he? Because you had just highlighted and talked about he had the opportunity to coach so many great players. But how was he able to keep such a high level of consistency and continue to just reinvent himself?
Well, part of it was exactly that. The fact that he could reinvent himself, that he could change the type of game that he played. When he had someone like Alcindor or Walton there, he could go with a post game and build it around a center who was clearly the most dominant player in the game. When he didn't have that kind of player, particularly the 2 years in between Alcindor and Walton, when he had guys like Sidney Wicks and Curtis Lowe, who were physical players but not huge players, he could change to a different kind of tempo, maybe run the ball a little bit more, always, though, emphasizing the pressure defense, always emphasizing the smart play. And the amazing thing about Wooden to me was that he allowed these players to have their own personalities, to be the people away from the court that they wanted to be. And obviously, we see very much different personalities in some of the players who went there. But when they got to the court, it was all business. When they got to practice, it was all business. And they clearly knew who the boss was, and they respected him. And I wonder today how many players in colleges, especially these one-and-done guys, really respect the program and really respect the coach the way they did Wooden back at UCLA.
Well, John Wooden was certainly one of a kind, and as you said, just the discipline that was within his program. And, of course, we all have heard about the pyramid of success, but the cornerstone to his program, it really was hard work. And I just love his saying, you know, winning takes talent, but to repeat, it takes character.
And that goes from the coaching staff through to the players. And without a question, back then, UCLA was one of those programs where character was 1A next to talent. And again, I'm not sure how many programs even back then went that route.
We are getting ready to wrap up our radio interview with Barry Wilner. The title of his brand new book is The Big Dance, the story of the NC2A basketball tournament. And I am going to assume, Barry, we want to direct all of our listening audience, where can they go and pick up a copy of your brand new book, you and Ken's book?
It's in all the major bookstores. You can get it on Amazon, I believe, and any other websites that also sell books. And I think it'll be a great accompaniment to the tournament because we pretty much go through every element of the history of college basketball since the NCAA tournament came into being.
And one of the final chapters in the book, which I found really fascinating, is you did talk about the youth movement, the impact of, you know, high school prodigies, you know, that are skipping college and they head right into the NBA. What is your position on that? We have seen some flourish, of course, and have had sensational careers, you know, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, and Dwight Howard. I think of even, you know, Kevin Durant with the Oklahoma City Thunder. He played 1 year under Rick Barnes at the University of Texas, and my goodness, what an impact he has had within the league.
I think nowadays, with so much money in the NBA game, that most players look at college basketball as a one-year stop or two-year stop. If they've got that kind of talent, the kind that Derrick Rose has, Kevin Durant, players like that. What I worry about is the number of players who think they have that talent and are advised they have that talent and then wind up trying to go to the NBA, turning pro way too early. And it hasn't really damaged the college programs because the game is as popular as it's ever been. CBS is paying billions of dollars to televise the tournament and will continue to do so for decades along with Turner. So clearly the one and done has not hurt the game itself. But I think it's kind of hurt some of the players, and I hope it doesn't become a trend where we're seeing players suing to even not go to college, which could happen at some point. What's great is that we don't see it in the women's game.
Well, you know, and I'm curious, you know, do you think there should be a two-year minimum? I just can't imagine, you know, 18, 19-year-olds going straight in to being a pro. I mean, wow, you still got a lot of maturity ahead of you.
I absolutely think there should be a two-year minimum, but I don't know if it would hold up in court. And I think that's where it would lead the NCAA and the NBA, so I think that's why they avoid it.
Of course, the title of his book is The Big Dance, the story of the NC2A basketball tournament. Are you working feverishly on getting your brackets filled out, Barry?
Well, let's see what teams are where, and I will do that. And, you know, here's the funny thing. I also do a women's tournament bracket, and someone was telling me that they heard that there's going to be some websites will have NIT brackets this year.
Wow, okay.
You know, I mean, if it's worth spending a little time doing that, that can be fun, too.
Oh, yeah, and it just continues to progress as we go along. Barry, thank you so much for the time. And again, we want to encourage you guys to go out and get a copy of his new book, The Big Dance. We'll talk to you again real soon. Thank you, Barry.
You bet, and thanks.
We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead here in just a moment.